This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The virus, most likely created with your money, escaped the lab, and the result was you had to say goodbye to your dying father on Skype.
It starts with exposure, but it's pretty noteworthy, just like the legacy media has not covered what I consider the biggest government scam of my lifetime.
We just hit 13 straight months without an illegal being released inside the borders of the United States of America.
He annoyed his own party by trying to cut the benefits bill. He gave the speech at the Island of Strangers saying immigration isn't working and then backtracked and said in order to be British, you have to be diverse.
Well, I'm never going to stop talking about COVID. I shouldn't say never. Who knows? Maybe 10 years from now, I'll be tired of it. But we were abused. You and me, American citizens, citizens around the globe, really, but American citizens were abused by the institutions that were supposed to support us and protect us. And it was a deeply, deeply evil time in this country. And I understand why so many people do want to move on. I get it. And here's why. It's really the simple. When there is enough guilt spread around to enough people, people just kind of want to shrug their shoulders and say, let's just go on. Let's move on, right? But we can at least focus on the principal architects of the people who destroyed your life and destroyed the value of the dollar, possibly hurt your health, possibly had you burying your mom on a Zoom call. We have to focus on these architects. And I want to give all the credit in the world to Tulsi Gabbard, former DNI Tulsi Gabbard, because on her last day, on her way out the door, she published this.
I'm releasing never-before-seen communications and documents that expose exactly how Fauci worked with politicized career leadership in the intelligence community to suppress the truth about his actions, the virus's lab leak origins, and his role in directing U.S. funding for this dangerous research that caused immeasurable harm and countless lost lives. Now, these documents expose Fauci's direct role in influencing and manipulating IC assessments on COVID-19 and how Fauci lied to Congress in 2024 when, under oath, he denied knowledge of or participation in discussions with intelligence officials about viral research. We also received testimony from multiple intelligence community whistleblowers who reported retaliation for challenging the intelligence community's manipulation of intelligence on the virus's origins, once again revealing a clear pattern of suppressing dissent, silencing critics, and burying the truth.
It's really, really bad. We'll talk about that in more depth, but I want to let her finish her piece. She went on.
Dr. Fauci's close relationships with the intelligence community enabled him to assume three key roles that shield him from scrutiny. First, Dr. Fauci funded dangerous gain-of-function coronavirus research linked to Big Pharma and their pursuit of universal vaccines worth trillions of dollars. Second, Dr. Fauci was the behind-the-scenes advisor who, alongside his hand-picked so-called experts, pushed the intelligence community to endorse a natural animal origin to hide his dangerous gain-of-function research that he funded using taxpayer dollars, all of this in a deliberate attempt to cover up the truth and shift the blame and attention away from Fauci's own actions. Third, Dr. Fauci became the nation's pandemic pundit, and he publicly pushed lies, disinformation, and censorship using every platform available.
So let's just boil this down to what We know and suspect some of these things are just suspicions, but we know enough now that I feel pretty comfortable coming out and saying it. You went to work and the government stole 25-30% of your money. The government then took that money and sent it to various bio labs around the world where they could work on weaponizing viruses. They did this in Wuhan, China. The virus, most likely created with your money, escaped the lab. The people responsible for all this research decided they needed to cover it up and lie about it. So in conjunction with the Central Intelligence Agency, these government figures went on national television and told you coronavirus came from a bowl of bat soup. And the result was you had to say goodbye to your dying father on Skype as he lay dying in a hospital bed. I'm not going to let it go. And I'm old enough to remember exactly how this scumbag Fauci was covered.
It likely jumped species from an animal reservoir into humans and now is spreading among humans.
The mutations that it took to get to the point where it is now is totally consistent with a jump of a species from an animal to a human.
Are you calling for the closure of the wet markets?
I think they should shut down those things right away. I mean, it just, it boggles my mind because what we're going through right now is a direct result of.
I am of the point of view that I still think the most likely etiology of this pathogen in Wuhan was from a laboratory, escaped.
So Dr. Redfield was mentioning that he was giving an opinion as to a possibility. But again, there are other alternatives, others that most people hold by.
That the most likely origin is a natural origin from an animal reservoir to human.
There have been accidents in a lab that happens intermittently. We've had experiences with that in modern times recently. But there have never been a situation where a virus escaped from a lab that's a brand new virus that no one has ever seen before that led to a pandemic. That has not happened.
Credit to Mays Moore for putting that together. Just to remind you, Fauci knew he was lying that whole time. It's not like he got it wrong, screwed it up. He was lying that entire time. And while he was lying, the media was calling him a superhero.
You are seen to many as a superhero, but you are a human being, and you've been working nonstop since all of this began, communicating with the public, trying to get a handle on this pandemic in terms of the science. So how do you keep yourself going in the face of all of this death and disease?
You know, Dana, it's really just focusing on the enormity of the problem and the fact that I do have a role in the response to this problem.
Is that guy ever going to burn for this? I don't know. Tulsi Gabbard had this to say.
He blatantly lied to Congress under oath during his 2024 testimony to the House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic, denying that he ever spoke to any intelligence agency about COVID. Now, the correspondence I'm releasing today directly contradicts his sworn testimony. Now, we received statements from multiple whistleblowers revealing that the intelligence analysts who dared to challenge Dr. Fauci's COVID origin conclusions faced threats of retaliation, marginalization, and many suffered career setbacks. For example, a contractor was terminated just days after coming forward to ODNI as a whistleblower. Another example, those who advocated for the lab leak hypothesis or expressed dissenting views were reminded by their managers that leadership would determine which analysts would be promoted and which would not. The message was clear: go along or be punished.
That man belongs in prison. Will we see it? I don't know. I'll ask the senator about it next. Ron Johnson will join us in just a moment. Before Ron Johnson joins us, let me ask you something. Are you putting your money where your morals are? Now, the answer to that question is sometimes for everybody. Me too, right? trying to be more purposeful with where I spend and don't spend my money. It's a process, if you will. I'll tell you one thing, though. Pure Talk at least makes it easy when it comes to your cell phone. Those big carriers, the big wireless companies, they are awful, dirty commie companies. Pure Talk is the hardcore patriotic company where their CEO is a Vietnam veteran. So pro-America, they hire Americans. Nobody does that anymore. You'll save money, keep your phone, keep your number. There's no reason not to switch to Pure Talk. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
But you do want to be informed.
Can you be informed without being all of those other things? We think so. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty, the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
If you shoot at us and we deflect it, it doesn't really count. And that just doesn't make any sense. You got to make a rule. Don't shoot at the United States.
Or if you prefer, Iran, blah, blah, blah.
America haters are winning. The would-be communists, the Marxists, are winning in America. And they're doing so openly, and nobody cares.
I think giving the downtrodden money enables them. They aren't getting the money. I'm winning.
Good Lord, that was the voice of the patriarchy right there, folks. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The COVID pandemic caused tremendous hardship and pain for millions of our fellow Americans and countless people around the world. Now, after years of lies and censorship and cover-ups, the American people deserve transparency, truth, and accountability. The tactics that were used to hide the truth are straight from the deep state playbook. Politicized self-serving leaders like Dr. Fauci covered up their own wrongdoing and abuses of power, manipulated intelligence, lied to Congress, and undermined a duly elected president by restricting his access to the vital facts he needed to keep the country safe. It's time you know the truth.
It was not exactly surprising to the people who've been paying attention to hear her say all that stuff, because it's stuff we all suspected and knew some of, but I hope this is getting more widespread coverage than I suspect it's getting, because we were lied to, and the principal architect of that got a bunch of medals and a pardon, and apparently he's just going to get to skip off into retirement. I don't know about that, though. We'll ask the great senator. Joining me now, Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. Senator, I understand the pardon. I understand all that. I'm not here to promise anybody anything. Can there be any accountability for this guy?
Well, there absolutely should be. It starts with exposure, but it's pretty noteworthy, just like the legacy media has not covered what I consider the biggest government scandal of my lifetime, the fact that they knew about adverse events, safety signals, and covered that up, lied to the American public. Now the legacy media is not covering the disclosure of more documents to prove, as you said, what we already knew. Again, one of the reasons I haven't been investigating the whole origin story is I've been pretty certain of that since 2020. It was pretty obvious to me when you heard about the fear and cleavage site. I was talking to computational biologists. They said it's man-made. And then particularly when the email surfaced of Anthony Fauci talking to his buddies that he's funded all their research, and they were all coming and saying, sure looks man-made to me, but within a couple of days, and then we saw that flurry of activity with conference calls the end of January, early February 2020, where all of a sudden that became a massive conspiracy theory. Anybody who would say man-made has just got to be a complete wacko nut. This obviously sprang from nature, and they came up with that the proximal origin study or that paper. And now we, with Rand Paul, had a really good hearing with Jim Erdman, a CIA whistleblower who was assigned to Tulsi Gabbard to execute a executive order by President Trump to look into and disclose all of these things that the deep states kept secret, whether it's JFK assassination, UFOs, and of course the origin of COVID. And he testified that he was being under surveillance of the CIA. They were trying to sabotage his efforts and Tulsi Gabbard's efforts as well. So again, this is, it's shocking, it's stunning, but the legacy media is complicit in it. They've been carrying the water for the deep state for decades, and the last thing they're going to do is come clean right now. So it's hard to get this exposed outside of the circle of people that there have their eyes open.
Senator, I mean, I have so many different ways I want to ask different questions here. Let me just drop this one because you brought it up. The CIA, I mean, honestly, when you think about biolabs, a man-made virus, the Central Intelligence Agency apparently attempting to cover it, it sounds like a Tom Clancy novel. Honestly, it sounds like one Tom Clancy would have rejected because it looks a little too ham-fisted. What did they do?
Well, first of all, again, there's prohibitions. We're engaged in treaties not to engage in bioweapons research. The way they get around that is to say, well, we can't trust those other guys, so we got to create these biological weapons so we have countermeasures, so we can have a vaccine or an injection. And that's how they got around it. And they really got around it by funding, 120 labs around the world concentrated in Ukraine? You know, Metabiota? They closed up shop. They sold to somebody. Again, we tried to do oversight on that. We tried to obtain their records, but they sold to another company, destroyed all those records. And remember, Hunter Biden was invested in Metabiota. So again, this runs deep. It's very difficult to get this information. I think the CIA was probably involved in this up to its eyebrows. They're just not going to come clean. I mean, we have a deep state, and they look at no matter who the president is, no matter how that president wants to get this information out in the public, they're just not going to do it. So when President Trump issues an executive order to have Tulsi Gabbard, the head of the director of national intelligence, to uncover this and make these things public, the CIA sabotages their efforts. We had a spokesman for John Ratcliffe for the CIA accuse Rand Paul and our committee of engaging in political theater by having that CIA whistleblower tell us the truth. And I demanded at the hearing that John Ratcliffe should apologize for his spokesperson smearing the committee, smearing Chairman Paul. I'm still waiting for that apology. It has not been forthcoming.
That's very disappointing to hear about Ratcliffe because you don't hear much from him. And I guess maybe in my very naive heart, I was hoping he was there cleaning some things up in a deep state, but it doesn't sound like that you're that impressed.
Well, apparently they get captured. I remember a famous dinner that Robert F. Kennedy had with Mike Pompeo. And the two revelations I found pretty interesting that RFK Jr. talked about afterward is, first of all, Pompeo had regrets that he didn't do more to rein in and take control and clean up the CIA. And then the other one was that there's a group of people in the CIA who just simply don't believe they're accountable to anybody. They're accountable to them, to what they want to do with the CIA. So again, presidents come and go, this too shall pass. They're going to do what they want to do. And whether the president approves it or even knows of it, it's really beside the point to them that they are a power to themselves. And I think we see that really throughout government agencies. But unfortunately, you got the CIA that has an awful lot of power, an awful lot of dark tools at their disposal. And as Chuck Schumer warned President Trump, I mean, you go out to the CIA and you do that at your own peril, that they have multiple ways of coming after you.
Senator, you have an op-ed out about the COVID injections, and I know people aren't reading about it on NBC News' website, so why don't you elaborate?
Well, sure. So again, we issued our report, 38-page report. It's actually pretty condensed. It's a lot of footnotes in that 38 pages, so read the report. But we published that, and we had held a hearing on it on April 29th of this year. It's been radio silent on the major networks. And then I figured, well, maybe to break through, I'll write a more simplified op-ed, 800 words, and submitted that to the Wall Street Journal. They took a couple of days, turned me down. New York Times took a couple of hours to turn me down. Washington Post, I don't think, even responded to me. The USA Today said, well, we'll let you know in about 7 days. And even disappointingly, because Fox News, some of their hosts have had me on, I've talked about this, both Fox News and Fox Business. You know, Newsmax, News Nation, those folks have had me on. But even Fox Digital turned me down. So we decided to self-publish on X. And God bless Elon Musk for preserving freedom of speech on the internet. The good news is it's gotten about 2.8 million views. We've had a lot of people distribute that and repost it. So about 2.8 million views now since last evening when we posted that op-ed. But again, it just lays out in summary the fact that Peter Marks, head of CBER, they approved vaccines, they're supposed to surveil safety, was warned that their algorithm is going to hide safety signals. 26 days later, he was shown a new algorithm, 25 safety signals, including sudden death, pulmonary infarction, Bell's palsy, different types of stroke. Three consecutive months, he saw more safety signals, and they told that person to cease and desist. They continued to use the old algorithm they knew would hide safety signals, then lie to the American public saying, we just didn't see safety signals. And to this day, these deep staters inside the CDC, inside FDA, are continuing to lie to the American public, bald face, that they never saw safety signals. They saw all kinds of them. They just didn't act on it. They didn't warn the public. They didn't warn doctors.
Is there anything that can be done? I know we've had this conversation so many times. To the people who told these lies and did this covering up, just because I know people are watching us right now who were harmed greatly, maybe even lost loved ones, that this did real harm to real people and that they are so forgotten about. Thankfully, not by your office, but by virtually everybody else.
Well, you know, so for those of us who have our eyes open, it's a growing percentage of the American public. You know, we want accountability. We want to see people, you know, put in jail. There's no doubt about it. The problem is the vast majority of Americans still get their news, still rely on the legacy media to turn something into a story. If they're not talking about it, if this doesn't cover news coverage, and by the way, Fox hasn't covered this on their news programs. They didn't report on this major scandal of my report. Now, we've had some of their TV show hosts have me on. I've been able to talk about it like I'm talking about it now. But I haven't seen Brett Baer, you know, lead his story. Major scandal uncovered. So, again, until the legacy media, these major news outlets, turn it into a news story. Not just an interview where I get to talk about this for 2 or 3 minutes in amongst the news of the day. Until they actually turn it into a news story, it's pretty hard to create the public pressure to have the kind of accountability.
Let's switch gears here before I let you go. The SAVE Act, FISA, Trump is still loudly banging this SAVE Act drum. I mean, it's pretty obvious the votes aren't there. I don't know whether he's trying to get that thing crammed through anyway, whether that's even realistic. Where are we at with all this?
Well, the president's coming to our Republican Senate lunch on Wednesday. It'll be interesting to see what his message is and how he's going to twist arms. But, I mean, the reason we don't have the Save America Act is because Democrats will not support it. And in the Senate, we need Democrats to join us if we don't eliminate the filibuster, and we don't have enough votes in Republican conference to do that. But, again, you shouldn't blame John Thune. He doesn't have the votes for the filibuster. It's the Democrats we need to blame, because any kind of election integrity measure is existential to their game plan of turning America into one-party nation. And let's face it. A political movement that would open up our borders to millions of unvetted criminals, okay, is certainly not going to stop it, you know, not stopping election integrity measures. And they've got the legacy media in their back pocket, so they're never held accountable. They can do this with impunity. They can block what 80% of Americans want, election integrity. They can block it with impunity.
Senator, appreciate you. Come back, please.
Have a good day.
All right. Cartels. Are they trying to bring a virus into the United States of America? Ammon Blair is going to join us next. He's always so good. You know what else is good? It's getting out of debt. Debt is awful. And this high interest debt that maybe you're carrying some of it. You got high interest debt, 20%, 30%. Just sucking the life out of you and sucking your bank account dry. Do you have a mortgage? You know, American financing can give you a path that gets you free of all this. This is what they do. This is what they specialize in. People who have mortgages and high interest debt, they get on AmericanFinancing.net/Jesse, and sometime later they are free. Do you want to finally be free? Go to AmericanFinancing.net/Jesse. We'll be back.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
But you do want to be informed.
Can you be informed without being all of those other things? We think so. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty, the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We try to bring you the truth
and help you figure out this crazy modern world.
If you shoot at us and we deflect it, it doesn't really count. And that just doesn't make any sense. You got to make a rule. Don't
shoot at the United States. Or if you prefer, Iran, blah, blah, blah.
America haters are winning. The would-be communists, the Marxists, are winning in America. And they're doing so openly, and nobody cares.
I think giving the downtrodden money enables them. They aren't getting the money. I'm winning.
Good Lord, that was the voice of the patriarchy right there, folks. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am still happy with my vote. I know we all have things we can and do complain about from time to time, but I just saw a report this morning. We just hit 13 straight months without an illegal being released inside the borders of the United States of America. I made a good vote. Joining me now to talk about that and screw worms and all manner of things is Ammon Blair, senior fellow, Texas Public Policy Foundation. All right, Ammon, how exactly did we go from 20 million in 4 years, roughly, we have no idea how many, to zero? Is Trump a miracle worker?
Isn't that insane? We didn't allow people to come into the country and be released on alternatives to detention. And so we were following current protocol. We were not allowing the executive orders by the Biden administration that created an illegal parallel immigration system to facilitate millions of foreign nationals into our country. And simply just following the rule of law.
All right. Where are we at in the cartel war? Because this is, at least in the minds of the American public, it has quieted down quite a bit. Trump was all hot and heavy into this war on the cartels, terrorist organizations, all that. And then, look, we're all chasing the latest thing in the news. Everything has to be about Iran now and everything else. Is the cartel war still going on? What's happening?
100%. If you see the Trump administration actually created the American Counter-Cartel Coalition, with countries on the Western Hemisphere, his Monroe, or what people call Donroe Doctrine, establishing not just American security, but regional security. And so if you look at what he's done, he's currently doing operations there inside of Ecuador. He's also doing operations, advise and assist operations there in Guatemala to not only counter the Mexican cartels, but to counter all the cartel organizations throughout the Western Hemisphere. And if you look at recent things that have happened in Guatemala, you'll see why. I mean, the State Department put out a travel advisory not to go to Guatemala. So we constantly talk about how bad Mexico is. But if you look at all the other countries, they're sometimes even far worse in terms of the level of corruption and the level of violence and also destruction and destabilization that the cartels, their cartels, as well as that insurgency is within their government.
When you say carried out an operation, what does this look like? Are we dropping Delta Force from the skies? Do we have some spook there giving advice? What are these operations?
Yeah, if you remember back in OIF and OEF days, we had an advise and assist teams. We'd go in there and advise and assist the local military and law enforcement to conduct operations on their own. That's more or less a special operations command, direct led operation, where they kind of teach them how to counter an insurgency. Really, this is a foreign internal defense mission. So internally, we're helping those government systems that may have somewhat of a structure reestablish themselves to counter the various threats that they currently face. If they don't have systems in place, whether that's technology, resources, or whatnot, we show them exactly how to use their current resource available, as well as manpower personnel, to counter the threats that they face, as well as corruption. Look, we also need to look at our lessons learned from Afghanistan. I would advise all of your listeners to read all of the inspector reports from Afghanistan, the SIGAR reports, to show how we completely failed in Afghanistan. And that was by completely dismissing the amount of corruption that Afghanistan had. And also, what I would also tell you your guests to look at is in 2019, The Blaze published an article comparing the maps between Afghanistan and also Mexico, At that time, the Taliban had roughly a little over 40% of control over Afghanistan, the population. And in 2019, the Mexican cartels had roughly 80% either control or contested control over the populated areas of Mexico. And so you can see that what we did or failed to do in Afghanistan has direct impacts into what we do or fail to do in the Western Hemisphere. And so the American counter-coalition, counter-cartel coalition is doing that. They're taking the lessons learned from insurgencies and counter-insurgency failures and a little successes across the world and trying to apply that here in the Western Hemisphere.
Ammon, the cartels themselves, I mean, we're vaporizing drug boats, we're cracking down on human trafficking. Business has to be pretty slow, right?
No, not at all. If you look at what the price of drugs are in the streets, if you look at cocaine and crystal meth, you'll see that they haven't risen. In some places, they have actually decreased. And the reason being is because it's plentiful. It's a land of milk and honey for those commodities. And so while we unfortunately have kind of a myopic focus on fentanyl, right? And the metric that we just talked about in the very beginning, illegal aliens. So we use those two metrics to determine whether we have actually countered the cartels whatsoever. We need to stop focusing on commodities and focus on the entity and organizations themselves. The fentanyl production, cocaine, crystal meth, narcotics. Then on the other hand, you have the human beings, foreign nationals, whether that's trafficking or smuggling of them coming into the United States from all the 170 plus countries that are coming into the U.S. And then we need to look in and look outside of those various ways and means. And you mentioned earlier about Screwworm. Look, the Mexican cartels control major portions of the cattle industry inside of Mexico and across the Western Hemisphere, mostly in Central America. They are trafficking around 800,000, yes, about 800,000 head of cattle into Mexico to then be either processed or shipped northward into the feedlots there to be exported into the United States.
Okay, I need you to elaborate on that. Why would they be putting Screwworm in the beef they're sending us? What?
Yeah, so look, the cartels have been trafficking cattle for quite some time. And the first known account of them trying to, or organizations trying to figure this out was around 2007. And in fact, the Asymmetric Warfare Group from the U.S. Army actually did a study in 2011 when they tried to figure out ways and means to dismantle, disrupt, and defeat the Sinaloa and Zetas cartel. And already back then in 2011, they already discovered that the cartels had complete control over agriculture. And I'm going to take a step back just for a second. When the cocaine trade shifted from the Caribbean to Mexico at that same time period, the one-party rule of Mexico started decreasing their power at the subnational level. And during that time period, the Mexican government were not really in support or supporting the farmers and ranchers in local communities. And so this created a perfect storm for the Mexican cartels at that time period were really involved in marijuana production and whatnot. And then they became drug trafficking organizations with cocaine. So at that time, they then were able to provide the societies with what the Mexican government could not. A lot of times it was just lending money. They became the money lenders because they couldn't get business loans from the banks. And so that's how really they got into and got involved in like the avocado industry. And then from there, from that point, the Mexican cartel saw that, you know what, there's only a finite amount of population in the United States or the other countries that they traffic their illicit goods to that consume narcotics that are dependent upon them to do it. But I'll tell you what, how many of you and your audience eat? I mean, all of us. So if the Mexican cartels could get into a commodity where every single American is dependent now, a majority from foreign imports, because we've offshored a lot of our crops to other countries to feed us. So if they could get involved in that commodity, Man, can you imagine a whole entire nation dependent upon a foreign terrorist organization for a commodity? So fast track to NAFTA. So avocados couldn't be traded until 1997, so 3 years after NAFTA. But by that time, from that point until now, you, look, the production has now increased almost 250% of avocados. And the value has increased over 5,000%. So in terms of business, this is a perfect opportunity to not only make massive financial gains, and then also be protected by the agreements, whether that's NAFTA or USMCA into the U.S. And so they are now in the illicit game and have been for decades. And yet we've refused to counter them in every single aspect of whether that's licit, illicit, or black market commodities. And then you got to think, well, if the cartels are in, whether that's avocados, citrus, or cattle, what is allowing them to be in this game? It's politics and policies. So now when the Trump administration is seeking after politicians in Mexico, it's because they're now all one and the same. The Mexican cartels are in symbiotic relationship from the bottom level all the way to the top. So now you mentioned really great, yes, numbers are down of illegal immigration. But if you look at the southern border, gotaways are actually now increasing. So I would tell also your audience for everyone to go and follow Chris Olivares, the DPS Public Affairs Office, and follow them and see how many gotaways, how many DPS troopers, how many local law enforcement are having to cover the basis where Border Patrol still can't apprehend everyone coming into the cross. We still don't have 100% domain awareness of our southern border across land, air, river, coast, electromagnetic spectrum, the subterranean, as well as cyber. So now we're in this end game as midterms are approaching. We need to start focusing our efforts on cartels, on all of their commodities, not just illegal immigration and not just fentanyl, but every single one of them. In the America's Counter Cartel Coalition could do that. They could shift and not just focus on labs in Guatemala and Ecuador and labs across the U.S. or in Mexico or in Canada. They could focus on every single aspect that the cartels are operating in with complete impunity.
Ammon, thank you as always, man. Awesome work. I appreciate it. All right. Well, maybe you're thinking you're going to have trouble sleeping tonight because you have screw worms in your beef. I'm kidding. I hope you're fine. But if you are worried about sleeping tonight, you know you can just have some dream powder from Beam. You can have a cup of hot chocolate. You know, if I didn't tell you there were these natural things in it, you would never know. If I didn't tell you there's reishi and all these other things, magnesium, you'd have no idea. But there is. It's just cinnamon. Mine is cinnamon chocolate. Drink it about 20, 30 minutes before bed, and you'll drift off to sleep like a little baby. And when you wake up in the morning, you'll feel great because you got natural sleep. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
But you do want to be informed.
Can you be informed without being all of those other things? We think so. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty, the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
If you shoot at us and we deflect it, it doesn't really count. And that just doesn't make any sense. You got to make a rule. Don't shoot at the United States.
Or if you prefer, Iran, blah, blah, blah.
America haters are winning. The would-be communists, the Marxists, are winning in America. And they're doing so openly, and nobody cares.
I think giving the downtrodden money enables them. They aren't getting the money. I'm winning.
Good Lord, that was the voice of the patriarchy right there, folks. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The question my party is asking now is whether I am best placed to lead us into the next general election. I have heard the answer of my parliamentary party to that question, and I accept that answer with good grace. Every decision I've taken has been about putting the country I love first. That is why I will resign as leader of the Labour Party.
Okay. This is, I think, a big deal, but I'm not totally clear on the politics over there and how it all works. But you know who definitely is Connor Tomlinson, host of Tomlinson Talks on YouTube and Substack. All right, Connor, pretend like I don't know anything because I don't know anything. What does all this mean?
Well, it means that a man called Andy Burnham is going to become Prime Minister, Jesse. There's a joke that floats around Westminster in this country. It's a Blairite, a Brownite, a Corbynite, and a Stormerite walk into a bar, and the barman says, "Hello, Andy. Andy Burnham is a permanent creature of the Labour Party. He's been mayor of Greater Manchester," it's basically Manchester and the surrounding areas, "since 2017. Of course, the grooming gangs have been happening in his back garden. He's commissioned a bunch of inquiries that found the police failed the survivors. The social services basically treated children's homes like slave auctions. But has anyone lost their job or been held to account under Andy Burnham? No. Nevertheless, he just won a crucial by-election in Manchester and is now an MP and is the de facto leader of the Labour Party after they go through all of their procedures. Keir Starmer was almost having to be dragged out of Downing Street with his fingernails scraping across the black door. He seemed to have been willing to go down with the ship, almost like a Sarah Connor's skeletal corpse holding the fence after the nuclear blast in T2. He really did not want to resign. But the pressure placed on him by Andy Burnham winning the by-election, becoming the most popular Labour MP, which means he can course be elected as leader of the Parliamentary Labour Party. He's the most popular figure nationally in the Labour Party, mainly because he hasn't been exposed to frontline politics for quite some time. He's just been kissing babies and cutting ribbons up in Manchester for a few years. It meant that his position was untenable, and it's because Keir Starmer is the most popular Prime Minister on record for a few reasons, namely because after Axel Rudi Kabana, the Rwandan anti-white racist, went in and stabbed a bunch of children, killing three young girls in Southport in 2024, and the country erupted into mournful riots, Keir Starmer decided to convene round-the-clock courts, throw people in prison for social media posts while freeing actual violent felons in order to make space for them, and declared the full force of the law would be used against the far right, you know, the grieving English people that were annoyed about the immigrants coming in and raping and butchering their children. He also scrapped, like, discounted winter fuel payments for pensioners. He annoyed his own party by trying to cut the benefits bill. He gave the speech "The Island of Strangers," saying immigration isn't working, and then backtracked and said, in order to be British, you have to be diverse, which means non-white, which means, you know, you don't have to be British to be British. Work that one out. So he's hated by pretty much everyone, left and right. He was the establishment's man until the Peter Mandelson scandal, the US ambassador that turned out to be Jeffrey Epstein's best friend, who Keir Starmer rushed into appointment because he basically owes his career to Mandelson, until that blew up in his face. So he has no support within the party, no support in the public, and now that Andy Burnham's rode into Parliament on a white horse, it seems like he's going to get replaced, and we're going to have a new leader of the Labour Party and a presumptive Prime Minister by the end of July.
Okay, let's talk about this new guy. Is he any better than the one you just tossed?
He's a friendlier salesperson, but the establishment just changed the man on the door, and everyone else remains inside the building. The vandalism will continue to go on. Fundamentally, Jesse, the problem of Britain is problems engineered by politicians, but all of the horrific outcomes that you see day after day that we've discussed on your show before, the rape gangs, the murder of Henry Novak, the Southport slayings, all the terror attacks, our economic impoverishment, you know, our debt is growing faster than every other country except, I think, Botswana. So we're basically just like a third world basket case at this point. The limitless numbers of immigration, the fact that we've got no energy security, no manufacturing base, all of these problems are a result of the system being put on rails by Tony Blair. And so the government, which is now, you know, the civil service is larger per capita than communist China, they actually run the country, whereas the politicians just basically deliver the sales pitch that's already been written for them in a brief by a civil servant to the media and get crucified for that. So what you're seeing with Andy Burnham is someone who is unimpressive, inadequate, and has held every position for every Labour leader possible, even if they contradict, just because he really wants to become Prime Minister someday, acting as the salesperson for a system which is depriving us of our country. And until you change that system by changing the government, and the government wants to change the system by repealing a load of laws that date back well even to 1948, the post-war government, until you replace the personnel, the judges, the heads of the police, the civil servants, until you fundamentally reconstitute the driving ideology and bureaucracy of the British state, and then nothing will change, and Burnham will find his popularity in the north dip down nationwide when he actually has to own all the failings that Keir Starmer had to own too.
Did you just say that Britain has per capita more government workers than communist China? Did you say that?
Yeah, I did, actually. It turns out that the British state spends, I think it's like 45% of GDP. When the Soviet Union collapsed, it was 50%. So we really are in the territory of, you know, one factory making one Wellington boot, another factory making another Wellington boot, and calling that GDP growth.
Good God. Okay. All right. What did Tony Blair do specifically?
So Tony Blair decided to reconfigure the constitution of Britain. So we don't have a written constitution like you guys. Of course, we wrote your constitution because America is our best invention. Nevertheless, we always had a constitution based on tradition. So Parliament would do certain things, the Crown would do certain things, the relationship was always one of mutual respect, and Parliament served at His Majesty's leisure. What's happened because of Tony Blair is that he created a Supreme Court. So the courts are independent of Parliament. When the judges used to get appointed by the Justice Minister, that meant that if you didn't like the judges, the minister could be voted out and someone else could be voted back in and swap them in. The courts are now above Parliament. So anytime Parliament proposes a bill to be drafted, they say, aha, but there's this international treaty or there's this law that was passed previously and that would be illegal, minister. So you can't actually deport migrant rapists to another country because of their human rights. Tony Blair passed the Climate Change Act, which of course commits us to net zero. That was even exacerbated by the Conservative Party, who decided to say 2050 is our target for that. That's why we have barely any nuclear power plants. We don't have any fracking anymore. The North Sea, it seems to be concreted up, and we're building endless solar panels for a country that gets less sunlight hours than Russia. He also passed this weird and boring thing called the Constitutional Reform and Governance Act. Bit of a mouthful. What it does is it puts the Civil Service's Code of Conduct into law. And that means the civil service is meant to be non-political, by which it means you are meant to carry out the business of the government of the day. But when it becomes law, it means that the government can't fire any of the permanent bureaucrats. So that massive bureaucracy, again, bigger than communist China per capita, that massive bureaucracy isn't accountable to the electorate or elected ministers. But they can get rid of politicians. They can tell the prime minister, you have to fire this politician and move them to the back of the benches, even if they're doing a good job, because if they want to lower immigration or if they want to cut taxes, that goes against our neutral guidance. That breaks the law, minister. And if you break the law, then you'll end up in prison when you're no longer the prime minister, so you actually have to follow what the permanent bureaucrats say. If we repeal all these laws, we can fire every civil servant. We can replace every judge. We can hold all the police officers accountable for the guidance that got Henry Novak killed. But until you do that, you can't do anything. And the Conservatives are just to blame, by the way, because they came in after Tony Blair's tenure in government between 1997 and 2010, and they called themselves the heir to Blair. A guy called Michael Gove, who's currently the editor of The Spectator, which is meant to be a right-wing magazine, but the first thing he did as editor was endorse Kamala Harris in the last election cycle, by the way. He was swanning around his government department, giving out copies of Tony Blair's biography, saying, read this, this is the manual. So ever since Tony Blair came in, every government has been a new flavor of Blairism. And what we need is anti-Blairism. We need to bring back our traditional constitutional architecture and start serving the British people rather than the bureaucracy or international institutions again.
Good God. Connor, hang in there over there, brother. Appreciate you, as always.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Light in the mood. Next. Well, I can't stand Barack Obama. I know this is light in the mood, but I cannot stand Barack Obama. And just a very brief explanation as to why. It's not just that he hates the United States of America. He's the only president we have ever had who genuinely hates the country. Plenty of them haven't cared about the country. That'd be like a Joe Biden type, but Barack Obama really hates it. I mean, that's what he thinks. That's what he believes. That's how he was nurtured. It's how he was raised. So you combine that with the fact that Barack Obama is really good at sounding reasonable. And that's how he was elected twice. It sounds so reasonable, sounds so moderate. Hey, stop being political. And then as soon as the lights are off and the cameras are off, he goes about the business of destroying the country. And since he got done being president, he didn't do what virtually every other president did, Bush, Clinton, all of them. They just kind of ride off into the sunset and go be the retired president. No, because again, he hates the country. He set up shop in Washington, D.C., and still works day and night to destroy the country. I don't like that. But you know what I do like? It just nourishes me. The fact that he has to spend the rest of his life married to this.
One word to describe your next chapter. One word.
Fun.
Me.
That's what you call you drop like the mic.
You know what? You seem to be grading her higher on her end.
What a sweet, sweet woman. Enjoy that, Barack. The rest of your life. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.